We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Overnight America. Now past midnight, so we'll be here for a couple more hours. In next segment, Farah Pandith will join us, a diplomatic entrepreneur. How do you fight ISIS and other extremist threats? Can you do it smarter? So I wanted to talk to her about that. You know, it's some of the interesting ideas, I guess. I don't know exactly what all the ideas are, if I agree with all of them, but, you know, we have a conversation about it. And tomorrow night, we'll hook up with Drex. Always look forward to spending time with our friends in Canada and connecting all of North and South America. Well, not South America, but all of North America. We still don't have an affiliate in South America that we're able to call upon and do this segment with, but man, wouldn't that be something. And I also want to mention on Wednesday night, something very special is going to happen. Oh, you're not going to want to miss this because our friend who came in just a couple of weeks ago, John Lindsay, Wednesday night, 11 o'clock, will present his findings from our paranormal investigation here at the radio station. So he has not allowed me to see his evidence yet. He has visual evidence. He has audio evidence. He is going to play it all out for the first time. We'll only be hearing it here on KMOX. And when he plays it, he'll give his expert opinion if he believes the KMOX is haunted or not. Is there a ghost that's haunting KMOX? I don't know. I'm nervous to find out. What if he comes back and says, oh yeah, definitely, you guys have ghosts everywhere. You guys have ghosts all over the place. Oh, I don't want that. I don't want to think every time I run to the bathroom during a break, I might have to punch a ghost on the way there. I don't want that. And then he just puts it in your mind. Even if I don't believe in ghosts, which I don't, but even if he says that, in the back of my mind, I'm going to start thinking, but what if he's right? What if it's like the start of Ghostbusters where the filing cabinets and the Dewey Decimal System, you know, you have all of those at the library, the different shelves that are popping out, and you have all these cards flying everywhere, and there's ectoplasm and stuff. What if that's going to happen after we call out the ghosts? Man, that makes me nervous. That's going to be Wednesday night at 11 o'clock. You do not want to miss that. Ghost everywhere. Oh, you better watch out. Don't forget, too, you can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Record. If you miss any part of the show, download it. The podcast is at KMOX.com/overnight. If you want to guess if we're going to have ghosts or not, you can always text in. The phone line is open at 314-436-7900. So Lori Loughlin and her husband, Mossimo, they put in their plea today, not guilty, in a college admission cheating scandal. So they're going to fight this thing. They got to have a ton of cash. I don't know how much Lori Loughlin has made over the years, but with Full House and syndication all day and all night on some channels. And then you have her doing all these Hallmark movies, and she's very well known. And then you also have the Full House reboot on Netflix. I'm sure she's not poor, but her husband being a fashion designer that's well known, I'm sure helps as well. You know what I didn't realize? I didn't realize that she had two kids that she got into college. Both bribed them in for $500,000 each. So we're talking about $1 million worth of bribes. What? Why? How? And I just gotta say this. Is it really worth sending your kids to school if you could have just gave them the $500,000 and they would have been, I don't know, 10 times happier? Because it sounds like these little, oh, I'm an influencer. I'm too cool for school. Let me take a couple of pictures. Selfie, click. And then they go to the classrooms. They don't pay attention. They don't care about it all. Wouldn't they have just been better off give them the money? If I was a kid, maybe that's why they're too dumb to realize this deal they could have made with their parents. Maybe they're not college material. All they had to do was say, forget about bribing. I don't need to go to USC. Forget about that. How about you just give me the $500,000 and we'll call it a day. See you later. Bye. Oh, I would have loved that. But instead, they're going to get stuck with the bill at USC, and then they're not going to be able to, I don't know, where are they going to go next? Community college? What college is going to want to admit them? Seriously. Now, let's just say they try to readmit into a different college. What's that college going to say? Do we want our finances audited every year because we admitted one of these kids in there? Because they're going to believe that, oh, perhaps maybe there was some bribes going on there too. Yeah, go ahead. Welcome on financial edits or audits over and over. No, thank you. No, thanks. Sorry. Lori Loughlin and her fashion designer husband pleading not guilty in the sweeping college admissions bribery scam. She's 54. He's 55. The Fuller House actress also requested to waive her appearance for an arraignment in college admissions scandal. The Department of Justice has told Fox News is reporting this one. The couple is among 50 people charged in the nationwide scam. The couple and more than a dozen other parents were hit last week with a money laundering conspiracy charge on top of the mail fraud conspiracy charge that they're already facing. Several other indicted parents have also filed court documents entering not guilty. They could face up to 40 years in prison. That's a long time. 40 years. 40 years. They got the money to get a high-priced lawyer. They can't go to jail. I mean, fraud, sure. Bribery, fraud, that's not great. But it's not like, oh, put them away for 40 years type of crime. I mean, look at some of the crimes that they're passing on anymore. Like you have the whole Smollett thing up in Chicago, you know, faking a hate crime on himself, tying up and putting these false police reports, all these other things in there. They just dismissed it. So, okay, bribing someone at a school to get your kid in is not good, but to me it's not 40 years in jail bad. I can see why they'd want to take this to court. I can see why they can make a pretty strong argument. She must be a great actress because every time they photograph her going in and out of a courtroom, she looks happy. She can't be happy. Because I'm looking at a photo right now and her husband and her lawyers are all standing there and her hair looks perfect. And she's wearing the glasses and looks like she's made up as she's going to go on to do a movie at Hallmark that she's already been dropped from. And all of these bizarre details of the case keep coming out. And I'm sure she can't be happy that all of her personal business is out there for everyone to speculate and joke about. And then there she is leaving the courtroom, smiles on her face. She's got to be the best actress in the world. And does it get any better than being a Hallmark Christmas time movie actress? I mean, you're always going to be in demand. They pump out those movies like you wouldn't believe. You can probably do two or three of those a year. And you got to be making bank doing those because they are just the same thing over and over again. You probably don't even have to memorize a script. It's got to be easy. Okay, so what's this one about? Okay, so a girl goes back to her hometown, falls in love, and has to debate to go back to the big job. Okay, got it. Okay, what's this script about? Okay, guy's living in the big town and comes back. You're going to play the girl that tries to tempt him not to go back and do the big-time job. Okay, great. What's this other script about? Okay, so both of you come back to your hometown at the same time, and you go back to the one ice cream parlor you met when you were a kid, and then you have to figure out, do you want to go with him, or is he going to go with you, or are you going to stay there? Great, fine. They're all the same script over and over again. It's just who goes where is changing. It's like a little piece of... you don't even have to change the words in the script. I don't even think the Hallmark viewers care. It's the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. It's actually more monotonous than HGTV, which is the same thing over and over and over again. Let me give you a quick rundown of HGTV. Oh, we don't like this house. It doesn't have what I want. Oh, we don't like this house. It doesn't have what I want. This house is okay. It doesn't have what either of us, but maybe it's a compromise. Which one will we do? House one, two, or three? Okay, house one, done. Same thing over and over again. So you know what I say? It's you can find someone else to do that sort of thing, whatever. She had the easiest job in the world. She had to show up to Full House, where she only had to show her face because they have the notoriety of something from the 90s that everyone still loves. Great. You showed up to Hallmark. You didn't have to do any work because all the scripts are the same. You probably didn't even have to memorize anything. You probably just went in there and just guessed the words. I'm just gonna free ball this one. Go. I'll just do it fine there. Let's just go off the top of my head. Okay, I got the script. We're done. Man, she really messed this up, didn't she? And she had enough money to bribe colleges $1 million. She didn't have to do all this. Her life was fine. Let your kids figure it out. Come on now. And then they can always fall back on you as if that's not the worst thing in the world. Farah Pandith coming up. Diplomatic entrepreneur. How to fight extremist threats. We see ISIS come up every now and again. They're still out there. we have really crippled them, but they're still out there. And we're going to talk to her about that. Next hour, James Templeton is our guest. Your diet is terrible. Yeah, you're eating garbage food. Big surprise, right? Okay, that surprises no one. We're going to also talk about better ways to eat in hopes to prevent things down the road from, oh, I don't know, heart disease. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
When news breaks out, KMOX breaks in. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. Depend on it.
Joining us now is a diplomatic entrepreneur, foreign policy strategist, and former diplomat. Also served as a political appointee under Presidents George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama. Farah Pandit, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you so much.
So the book is called How We Win, which is an interesting title, mostly because we're always talking during the Trump administration about trying to win that battle on terror. So we had during the Obama administration, of course, we had some efforts for that. It seemed like one of the big initiatives from President Trump was to ramp up and really try to eliminate ISIS. We've seen in the past month him even talking about eliminating ISIS. Can you actually ever really eliminate terrorism around the world?
President Trump is incorrect in this statement saying that he defeated ISIS. The ideology that allows groups like ISIS to recruit young people is not dead. And it's a global phenomenon, and it is a real threat. You're looking at groups that use the name of Islam to recruit. There are many of them out there. And there are a billion young Muslims under the age of 30 that they are going after. So this is a real significant, important, and present situation that we are in, and it is by no means over.
And by any means, can you actually defeat it? Is there any way to defeat it?
Well, the book is about solutions that are available and affordable right now to dramatically reduce the appeal of the ideology so that our government and other governments around the world are able to look at this threat differently and citizens can feel more secure.
So when you try to go through some of these different ideas and how we win, I was interested to find out how you came to these ideas of how we actually defeat it, because you've done a lot of traveling, you've talked to a lot of different people. Can you kind of tell me what influenced you in this way of thinking?
Ryan, you know, one of the most critical components to all of this is to understand what I saw, and I was really shocked by it. Muslims in Muslim-majority countries, as well as Muslims living as minorities, those in the demographic of millennials and certainly now Generation Z, are young people that have navigated a post-9/11 world. And what is remarkable is that no matter where in the world I went, I was seeing this crisis of identity that was very real. It was an emotional response to 9/11, but also taking it to the next step, it actually affected the way they thought about themselves, who they were, how they wanted to express their religiosity. And that's a problematic thing for us to understand, because the bad guys know that that is happening and they are ripe and ready, just waiting and helping to make those young people feel like the only answer is theirs. Huh. So one of the components to this is what I saw on the ground, this identity crisis. And secondly, Ryan, I think what's really important here is that we have made mistakes in understanding the threat that we're facing by looking only at particular parts of the world and thinking that, you know, it's something that's happening in Afghanistan or something that that's happening in Iraq, when in fact, digital natives, millennials, are obviously connected around the world, which is why when ISIS was trying to recruit, you saw young kids from all over the world, whether it was Trinidad and Tobago or it was, another country, places that people were not necessarily, expecting to see. So for me, I think I wrote this book because I wanted Americans to understand what it is I saw around the world, the trends that I saw, but to also understand, having been in this, having worked and pioneered, a lot of the initiatives that they're working on in the soft power space, that this is not a hopeless situation, that we have in 2019 tools at the ready. The issue is that we haven't scaled them.
The book is How We Win, and author Farah Pandit joining us here on KMOX. crisis of identity. So I wanted you to elaborate a little bit on that. So when you say crisis of identity, do you mean maybe a cultural one because you talked about millennials, or are you maybe talking about, you mentioned how some Muslim members of ISIS are going after younger members. Is that, do you see that as the crisis of identity that they're taking advantage of as recruitment? Or can you explain that?
Sure. So, you know, obviously, Ryan, everybody growing up goes through these things where you ask questions about who you are and you're navigating all kinds of things. You know, what am I going to do when I grow up? What's the purpose of life? You know, all of these things. Everybody does this. Post 9/11, however, this demographic of young people have grown up with the word Islam or Muslim on front pages online and offline.
So you mean like here in America?
Fierce.
Yeah.
All over the world.
All over the world.
This is what's so important, Ryan. All over the world. So whether it's in Indonesia or it's in Pakistan or it's in Norway or it's in Brazil, if you're a young person and you're Muslim, there is far more fierce attention on you in a very profound way. And it's made this demographic of young people really, act out differently in the sense of they want to get answers, but they want to get answers from peers, from people that they feel have authenticity. And what's happened here is that when they are looking for answers, when they have gone both in an offline and an online space to try to say, you know, how can I, quote, be a better Muslim, let's suppose, or how can I express my identity differently, or what's the difference between culture and religion, the answers that they get back and have been since 9/11 have been profoundly affected by terrorist organizations that have curated, sexy, savvy answers that are peer friendly and make them move in a direction to get to want to know more. What we haven't done is been able to be in that space. We haven't been able to disrupt that process in which these young people are being lured and preyed upon by these terrorist organizations. So when I think about what is available to us, the tools that are in our toolbox as non-extremists, we have to understand that we're looking at the very same tools that the bad guys have and have deployed. We just haven't used them. And so when you're talking about the crisis of identity, you want to be able to explore the diversity of Islam. You want to be able to counteract this idea that there's a monolith. You want to be able to give kids alternative narratives given to people by people that they find to be real. So, for example, a former extremist who decides that they no longer wanted to be part of Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or ISIS, and they're now able to tell a young person, let me tell you what that experience was like. Let me tell you how they duped me. Let me tell you more about this experience. And so when we begin to take and shape both on a private side, the stories of these young people, but also sort of saturate the marketplace with the alternative ideas, you're beginning to see a countermeasure that can, in fact, make a difference to these young people and how they think about themselves.
Her book is called How We Win, How Cutting-Edge Entrepreneurs, Political Visionaries, Enlightened Business Leaders, and Social Media Mavens Can Defeat the Extremist Threat. Author Farah Pandith will continue our conversation next on KMOX.
Get ready for Game 4 of the first round Stanley Cup playoff series between the Blues and Jets. It all happens tonight. Pre-game skate at 8. The puck drops at 8:30. You can hear the game on Y98FM and streaming at KMOX.com or KMOX on radio.com.
Farah Pandith joining us here on KMOX, and the book is called How We Win, which is interesting to me, too, because a lot of different countries have certain restrictions when it comes to their internet and searching. Like you see, China's very restrictive, and you can't normally post things against the government in there. Then I think about some of these other foreign countries that have very similar punishments for posting things against government or whatnot. So the way that they search is also affected, and the things that they can come up with around the world could change, too. But I was always under the impression a lot of these big companies like the Googles of the world are always trying to counter this on their back end, too. So they try to filter out some of this extremist stuff, even if it's not in a foreign country where it's discouraged or encouraged. I always thought that they're always changing their algorithms. They're trying to stay a step ahead of the members that are trying to control and recruit, and that they were hopefully staying a step ahead. But it sounds like to me a lot of these members are so savvy and they're so good at what they do. They're the ones that are staying a step ahead.
Well, it's important that you're bringing up the technology companies and what they're doing with the algorithms, because the same algorithms that tell you what color pen you want to buy or what color sneakers are, or what brand of sneakers or jeans are appealing to you, is the same kind of cultural listening, the same kind of social listening that can, in fact, affect the way in which we design programs that interrupt these kids' thinking. And it is important, Ryan, to remember that this isn't just about takedown. This isn't just about them identifying extremist content online. This is about tech companies as well as the private sector, which is why I have an entire chapter in my book about what the private sector needs to do here. It's important that they understand that the genie is out of the bottle here. We cannot go back to a place where we pretend we don't understand what the internet does, that we don't understand how it affects behavior, that we don't have any clue as to how the algorithms are now overtaking one another and recalibrating the way people see things. We have a lot of data on our hands. We have a lot of information about the way people operate online, and that very information can actually be utilized to provide the countermeasures that are needed to saturate both an online and an offline space so that kids aren't finding this ideology of us versus them appealing. And let me be clear here. The us versus them ideology of all kinds of extremists, whether we're talking about the so-called Islamic State or white nationalists, that us versus them has a real presence, as we know, because we're watching hate rise in our world, but in an online form. And so many people believe that if you just take it down, that will be enough. And it's not enough. What I argue very fiercely is we need to stand up and stop being lazy on hate. We need to do far more to understand what kind of communities we want to build on and offline, and that every sector of community can make a difference. So what you were talking about with the private sector having different, making different choices in different countries that they're in, as well as governments that have different laws, that is all part of, obviously, the mapping of what's happening globally. But it doesn't mean that a company does not have a consciousness about what it is that they're responsible for. Facebook is one of the largest governments in the world, the nations in the world, I should say, and so they should act as though they are taking responsibility over their citizens.
One thing you mentioned there, white nationalism or ISIS or whatnot, or depending on what's being combated, do you see those on the same level?
It's not about which kind of hate is the worst. I think that that's a very problematic framing. Hate is hate no matter who the victim is, and the use of violence in the name of politics or theology or whatever it happens to be is wrong. We all agree on that. What I have seen, which is really shocking to me, is that almost 20 years after 9/11, when we have watched terrorist organizations rise and we're trying to figure out how to stop the appeal of this ideology so that these groups don't have recruits, at the very same time, we are now dealing with, on top of that nightmare, we're now dealing with the increase of this other kind of extremist threat. And what's important, Ryan, is to understand that even though the origin stories for these different groups are different, even though the way in which they operate may be a little different, they understand the power of coalition. They understand that they can learn from each other. And even though you might say, the white nationalists can't stand people who make up ISIS or can't stand Muslims, the playbook that ISIS has put forward on how to do this is something that they will use. And so it's a it's a devastating scenario that we're in right now, because not only do we understand that this is happening and it's happening in real time, but there is no response, none, from our government. There's no scaled response from the private sector, and there is no scaled response from citizens globally to put the antibodies in the system where this kind of us versus them ideology does not exist.
So does that mainly play just when it comes to, let's say, violence? Or when you say hate is hate, for example, a lot of times people will look at something as hateful and another person won't see it as hateful. You know, and when we see a lot of the politics that float around here in the United States, someone might have a disagreement with a religious belief, for example. One person may see it as hateful, one person may not. We're not looking at that as the same level, like, are we?
Well, so, Ryan, I mean, I think I'd put a distinction here about civility. I mean, the issue of civility, I think many of us have seen, even in the last few years, American civility has changed. The way people talk about each other, talk with each other, what we're willing to absorb as fellow citizens has dramatically shifted. I'm not talking about that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about hate groups. I'm talking about those that use the us versus them and insist on an ideology that provides an outlet, a goal, which is which requires violence to get to where they are.
Okay.
And I think that there is, you know, we are watching, the ADL had an amazing report that was out a few weeks ago around the rise of hate globally and also in our country. And we, you know, we've watched, Ryan, you know, over the last few years, the rise of anti-Semitism. And we've just watched. We have seen incidents here and there, and we've said, oh, that's a terrible thing. But has anybody risen up and said, this cannot stand? Because had we begun to have a larger consciousness and more action, perhaps something like the synagogue, you know, devastation would not have happened in our country. Mm-hmm. So whether it is, in my view, whether it's what happened in Boston or what happened in Bali, what happened in Charleston or what happened in Christchurch, we are seeing very significant changes in the way these kinds of extremist groups operate, what they're willing to do, and how violent they are with the events. And I mean to say that we're now watching in real time live streams of what the devastation is when somebody decides to do something violent. And this is because we have not acted. This is because we have waited for somebody else to take responsibility over the rise of this us versus them. And I wrote this book because I have been doing this since our country was attacked on 9/11. I know what we are capable of doing, and it's far more than we're doing right now. And I think Congress, as well as this administration, should get serious about the work on fighting this kind of ideology, and we should get serious right now.
Okay. The book is called How We Win. Author Farah Pandith. If people want to check out your book, where can they find it?
On any platform that books are sold, and I hope that they do.
The book, it says How We Win, big letters right up front. You hold that book up, and that's got to be like 80 font lettering, it seems like. It's like right up there. It's like billboard size. It's great. You know what you're
Ryan,
getting.
We have to have billboards around us to remind us that this is not the kind of world we want to live in and that there's something we can do.
All right. Author Farah Pandith, if people wanted to look up the book, of course they can look up How We Win. If they wanted to look you up, is there any website or any social media?
Yes. So I have a website. It's farahpandith.com, and that's FARAHPANDITH. FarahPandith.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you very much.
Well, how about that?
Well, we'll post that up, too, in our podcast at KMOX.com/overnight if you want to check that out. Hey, Brett Baer asked a question of Bernie Sanders earlier. Did you see they did one of these town hall things? I guess Fox feels like they have to keep up with CNN and do these town hall meetings, so they welcome on Bernie Sanders. And Bernie did something that was interesting to me, and I wasn't expecting it, which you'll hear next on Overnight America KMOX.
Now, more of Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX.
Here we are. You're going to get a Bernie Sanders impersonation, so I'm warning you right now. Something strange happened with Bernie. Something really strange happened. So CNN does this town hall deal, I don't know, once a week or twice a week or whatever it is. I mean, they try to find ways to get people to watch their station, and they think, oh, I know what we'll do. We'll bring in the best of the best of the Democrat candidates. Senator Gillibrand, let's bring Gillibrand on. And, you know, the exciting Senator Booker. Ooh. I don't know why Fox is doing it. I think it's weird that they are trying to imitate CNN, because I feel like they would do just a fine job on their own with their regular commentators doing their regular commentator thing. If you look at the ratings, it's pretty apparent. If you look at just total number of viewers, they normally equal all the other networks combined. So they're like way above that, sometimes even double. And you get your Sean Hannity's of the world, who's still very, very popular. So just earlier, so Brett Baer, news anchor, was doing one of these kind of town hall meetings where you get a chance to talk to the people that are running for president. They were in Pennsylvania, and their subject was Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders. I can't contain myself. I want to do a Bernie Sanders impersonation right now. Something interesting happened when they asked him this question, and I want you to listen to how he brings up media. That's number one. But I also want to have you pay close attention to how he's pandering to the Fox News audience. I think Bernie Sanders is trying to play Fox News as a way to get the support he needs, as opposed to create Fox News as the enemy. I think Bernie Sanders is trying to create all media as the enemy. He's trying to adopt this fake news philosophy that was very good and very, very plentiful for Donald Trump. Plentiful, would that be the right word? The fake news, abundance of fake news, maybe? A plentiful sea of fake news? Listen how he answers this. Maybe I'm getting the wrong impression. And let me ask you if you think that's what he's trying to do. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120.
So Buttigieg obviously is the youngest candidate. He would certainly be the youngest president if he were to win at 37 years old. And you are 77 years old, sir. He's calling for a new generation. He didn't name anyone specifically. But what do you say to those who have raised the question of whether or not you would be too old at 79 as president?
Well, follow me around the campaign trail.
That's a good answer. Actually, that's a very, very good answer. But listen here.
I mean, it is a fair question. It's a fair question. And all I can say is if there was wood here, I'd knock on it. Thank God my health is good. When I was a kid, I was a long distance runner, one of the better milers in New York City. And I've continued to have my endurance.
When I was a kid, my parents couldn't afford the horse and buggy that all the other rich people would have. So I had to walk 10 miles to school uphill both ways with Wonder Bag plastic socks because we couldn't afford socks. I'm sorry, I knew I was going to do a Bernie Sanders in there. Ooh.
But I think when you look at a candidate, yeah, you could look at age, that's fair. You could look at experience. I was a mayor for 8 years, know a little bit about local government.
Right.
I was a member of the House.
Mr.
I'm
politician
a member of the United
now.
States Senate. I've been all over the world talking to heads of state. So, I mean, I think it is a combination of factors. But at the end of the day, this is what I honestly believe.
You know, make sure to give my qualifications. Well, that's more of Obama than Bernie Sanders. It's a fine line between the two when it comes to impersonations.
It's not whether you're young. It's not whether you're old. It is what you believe in. And I have to say...
All right, so this is where he gets into it. And this is my philosophy. I think Bernie Sanders is trying to play the Fox News crowd to get him behind the idea that there's not one person monopolizing the idea of fake news. Listen to how he handles this, and keep in mind, he is on Fox News at the time he's saying this.
And I have to say, and this is not a criticism of Fox. This is a criticism of media in general. There is too much focus on individuals and not enough focus on the American people and what their needs are. And I want to tell you this, and again, this is not just Fox. This is all the rest. I go out and I listen to the people, and they ask me questions. Those questions are often very, very different than the issues being discussed by media on Capitol Hill. Okay? So.
All right, Senator, we want...
Ooh. So this is how he goes out there. He says, it's not just Fox, it's all the media. And so he's blaming and he's throwing all the media underneath the bus. Yes! Well, I think Bernie Sanders is very savvy. I think he realized that he can't keep playing Fox News as the enemy. I think he needs to look at what a Fox News audience base can bring him into this next election. I think when you look between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders during the Democrat primaries during the last presidential election, you had a lot of interest in a Bernie Sanders, and a lot of people didn't know who he was until this election. I had no idea Bernie Sanders existed. You know, who do I care? Senator from Vermont. Who do I care? But all of a sudden, he's drawing these big crowds, and he's saying all these real socialist things, and he's, you know, kind of goofy, but he's very convicted, and he's comes by it honestly. I mean, of all the candidates on the Democrat Party, he absolutely came by it honestly. But man, was he far, far left. And the Democrat Party did not want him to be the candidate. So they rig it, Hillary Clinton gets in, and they lose. Donald Trump is president. I think Bernie Sanders looks at that and says, well, if I'm going to win, if I'm going to do this again, and I'm running for president, which he's, at last check, KTLA did a rundown of all of the different fundraising. Yeah, Donald Trump is like heads and shoulders above them when it comes to fundraising. But Bernie Sanders has so far raised $18.2 million. He has $28 million cash in hand. He entered the race February 19th. So if I was a Bernie Sanders, let's say I was far left. Oh, boy. Okay, let me try to play that part. Okay, I'm going to be far left and seen. Okay, what do? I don't alienate and try to make an enemy of the Fox News audience as a Hillary Clinton did. You know how she says, oh, basket of deplorables and all of this and all of that. She ostracized all of these giant viewer base and people which hated her for it. I mean, they completely made it their life mission to make sure she would not become president of the United States. And she lost, and she didn't. So what happens next? What happens to a Bernie Sanders if he doesn't necessarily embrace Fox News, but he doesn't make them their enemy? What if he goes out there and tries to play the card of, I'm actually more moderate than you're giving me credit for? You know, you may think I'm this crazy socialistic guy that travels to Russia when I was younger, and I love the way that they were doing things in communist countries, and praising Venezuela and talking about, you know, what did he want to see? Taxing the rich up to, what was it, 70, 80, 90% or whatever he said back. I forgot what the numbers were. I'm not that crazy. Actually, I'm just your run-of-the-mill liberal. Maybe that's what he's going to do. And you know what? He does a good job answering for himself. He keeps himself accountable for these things. He's charismatic. This could be a very dangerous run by Bernie Sanders if this is how he's doing things. Fascinating to me to see that side of it all. Up next is James Templeton. He says, your diet is terrible. Why are you eating so much junk? You're killing yourself. James Templeton next. He'll explain on Overnight America, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.